The stories we tell ourselves in order to live are the stories that allow us to go through the hard times and enjoy the good times. They're the stories that allow us to see the world in a way that makes sense to us and feels authentic. They're the stories that make us a part of the world and allow us to put our childhood, adolescence, and old age into context. The stories we tell ourselves in order to live are not simple plot lines. They're not, I was born, I got married, and then I died. The stories we tell ourselves in order to live are how we move through the world. It's how we create a narrative that allows the world to make sense. And it's through hearing these stories, through hearing the stories we tell ourselves, that we get to expand our horizons, that we get to have a more comprehensive worldview, and we can find ourselves when we stop looking for ourselves. The stories we tell ourselves are about paradigms and not plot lines.
Yep. I said it before and I'll say it again. Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Feminist, a person who believes in the social, political, and economic equality of the sexes.
You wake up, housed up, run around in it, lost and on it. This diamond, my diamond, this rock, my rock. I woke up like this. I woke up like this. We flawless. Ladies, tell them I woke up like this.
My name is Claire Rocha. I currently live in East Hampton, New York. This is kind of what I'm all about all the time. I mean, I always try and keep it positive. I always try to remind myself that the only way to move is forward, that you just have to keep moving forward. And I absolutely believe that all of life is a decision. All of life is a decision. It's a decision to wake up happy every morning. It's a decision to fake it until you make it and do whatever it takes to just get out of bed and figure it out and take a path. You gotta work hard to get what you want. I do certainly believe in coincidence, and I certainly believe in sort of like a idea of like a cosmic alignment. Like sometimes I feel like my timing just feels so good. Everything is just on, everything is just working. I'm getting exactly the right place at the right time. I'm catching green lights, you know, like I'm metaphorically just, I'm hitting all green lights all day long. And when that's happening, I feel like I truly am making the good decisions that I need to be making right now, because I'm not having just absent-minded, losing things, missing time, missing patches. But I don't necessarily believe in divinity, in that I don't believe that there's a story that's been written as to who I'm going to be or who I'm supposed to meet. I think that there are lots of different versions out there of who we could all be. There were lots of different ways that my life could have gone. There were lots of different partners that I've been with and I've had relationships with, and I see where I could have gone on with several of those people, in that it wouldn't necessarily have been the decision I was supposed to make or not supposed to make. It's just a decision I could have made, and I could have had a totally different looking life than I do right now. I always think about things in terms of that. There are dozens of versions of us out there in the world, living different kinds of lives, and it's all just a matrix of thousands of decisions to get there. My day right now is total chaos. I have two babies that were a little bit closer together than I thought my life would be looking like. I have a nearly 3-year-old and a 7-month-old. So currently I am a stay-at-home mother in East Hampton, New York, and it is just babies, babies, babies all day. It's a lot of caretaking. I think my 22-year-old self would be shocked that this is where I am at 31, but still like fairly impressed. I'm really happy having a family and being married and having two children now. I don't think I would have known I would have been this young, but we never really know how it's going to work out, right? I got married when I was 28, and Guy was a honeymoon baby, and Louie we had after a long winter last winter. So I think 22-year-old me would have thought I would be still kind of crushing it career-wise before I jumped on reproducing, before I had a baby. Such is life. I always knew I wanted to be a mom more than anything. I always was very, very excited to be a mother since the time I figured out how this whole process works of life carrying on. I could not wait to carry a child. I could not wait to have a child. I always wanted to be a mother, but I think there's something heavy about it because of that, because I was so well prepared, because I've been looking after children for so long and been involved with, I was a doula, been involved with teaching aides and my parents and just all of that for so long. I think I get annoyed at how frustrated I can become. I don't think I realized just how mentally taxing it was going to be day in and day out. There was something good I read the other day about people that are depressed are living in the past, people that are anxious are living in the future. There's always going to be part of my mind that's like that. I always need to have attainable and difficult goals on the horizon that I see and can tick off, and I know that they're coming. I always need to have a vacation on the horizon. Like, I am definitely a very future-driven person for sure, but kids force you to snap out of that because you just have, their needs are, again, just so great, and you have to just be on your toes. Like, your kids catch you flat-footed, and you're in even more trouble. So I think that in knowing that I wanted to have children so much, it's difficult to realize how you thought it was going to look versus how it actually looks. And then there are these moments that are so much better than you ever thought it was going to look and are just pure magic and are just actually awesome in the actual sense of what that word actually means. And it's so gratifying that you just feel like, that's it, you're living all the life there is to live. Like, there's no more life that you could possibly be cramming into your body. That's it, that's as happy as I'm ever going to be, was right there, you know, in a teepee with my kid, with him smashing a piece of cake into his fingernails, and he's just so damn happy, and I made him, he's fibers of my body, I kept him alive, and it's beautiful. But kids force you to be present because they're there in your face all the time asking you to do things. I was a nanny for a long time for this one family in Colorado who I worked for years, and even when I moved to New York, I would still go back and help them all the time and still see them, still go on vacation with them, whatever. We all became real good friends. When I was like a college kid, watching them judgmentally as parents, I always had of course, crazy criticisms in my head all the time about like, when they're my children, I'll do X, Y, Z, whatever. So I would always say in my head, and I still say this to my friends now, like, I never want to be a mom that can't build a fort because there's dishes to be done. And that's just like kind of something I like remind myself all the time, you know, because I can get really, really caught up in just the details of life. I think that's also just being a creative person. Like, I can just go crazy on the cleaning and the organizing, and just the drudgery of motherhood is so intense that you have to keep on top of it. You have to keep on top of the train, or it just becomes a shit show all around you all the time. But there's also something that's really liberating about remembering that none of it really matters. Like, if the laundry doesn't get done, if things don't get put away, if we all have peanut butter and crackers for dinner, at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter. It is more important to just like hang out with my kid for this one afternoon and this one moment and just let him make an absolute wreck painting this, you know, this thing that we're painting right now. And then we have glitter paint on things for days and days and days. But it's magical, you know.
When we arrive, sons and daughters, we'll make our homes on the water. We'll build our walls, aluminum. We'll fill our mouths with cinema now. These currents pull us
close. I mean, it's possibly one of those things that's just like impossible to control, but I do definitely always say that I just don't want to expose my children to chaos. Like, again, because my mom, like, with living with my mother for so long, mental illness is so unpredictable, and it's so vague, it's so abstract, it's so misunderstood, because people exist on such a spectrum of mental illness. But that kind of chaos was terrifying as a kid. And I kind of feel the same way about, like, so many situations. It's just that. It's the idea that I just don't ever want my kids to have, like, an unpredictable environment, a chaotic environment. And I realize, obviously, that there are going to be things that happen here and there that would be like that, but nothing ever completely to that degree and scope of things. But that's definitely always something, and, you know, I think that we grew up in similar situations in which my parents never fought in front of me. I never heard them fight. We never were exposed to that. So I see that as being the relationship model that I've chose to emulate, and we all kind of just recreate our parents' relationship no matter what. But I can't handle it. Like, I can't handle things being discussed in front of the children, even though they're still babies. I don't ever like any kind of tone being taken in front of the kids, and that's important to us. My husband and I most certainly talk about that, you know, we are, like, possibly making our kids such a weirdo with how effusive he is, because he's so effusive, and he's so affectionate, and he's so engaging with other people. And I think that's just because my husband and I both are, and we always have been with him as a baby, but, you know, who knows how much of that is nurture, and who knows how much of that is nature. But Guy, thus far in life, is a total lover, and he really is so sweet, he really is so kind. He's compassionate to a point that I kind of worry about him. That he's just so available. His love is so available. He's crushed when his friends have to leave. You know, he was crushed when he went to the beach yesterday. He sits in the window and will watch until there's nothing left to see of someone walking away. You know, he misses his dad so much sometimes throughout the day that he can't reconcile those feelings. Like, he has to call his dad on the phone. And prior to him only kind of learning how to use the phone now, he's only kind of starting to be able to talk into the phone on cue in a way that you would want him to, I will just hear him talking himself through the idea that his father is currently at work, and he's going to come home later, and he's going to be home around bedtime or dinner time, and when he comes home, he's going to sing him his Chicken Man song. He always does, and he tells his trucks, he tells his airplanes, he talks his toys through it, because I can tell he's just grappling with that all day long. I can tell it's a struggle for him to miss his dad that much, and that worries me, how great his feelings are. It does, it just worries me sometimes. He's so sensitive.
Listen up, you can be anything in the world, you only must realize that It ain't no guarantee. Nothing's in the way of what you wanna be. So follow your dreams, always shoot for the stars. No matter which direction, you'll be sure to go far. This is our first step as we get an education. This nation won't stop us from the push of limitation. Today we learn to write and dream. Someday we'll bloom as flowers.
I was a stylist for a couple of years, but I've always just been a creative person. I've always been an artist. I worked in an art gallery for quite a while. I worked all kinds of jobs in New York. But then when I really like were to look at my resume, things are actually a lot more related, I guess, than I would realize. Styling was a silly waste of my time, I felt like, while I was doing it, but the money was great. And the scheduling was appealing, and it's a very glamorous job, and it was fun. It was fun until it wasn't anymore. And I got out, and I was just in a really desperate position in New York. And I purely just knew how much money I wanted to make a year in order to be comfortable. And I felt like I needed to pad myself for a while and take a break. Freelancing is incredibly stressful. And I would get to the point that people would owe me so much money that I would just be living off of nothing for so long. In theory, you make a good living. In practice, you have $7 in your bank account for 11 days at a time, you know. So I purely just knew how much money I wanted to make per year and started searching for jobs at that salary level. And turns out it was all executive assistant positions. So I got a job as an executive assistant for an architecture firm. And I did that for almost a year, and I made bank, and the hours were excruciating. And it's the only straight job I've ever worked. It's the only time I've ever worked in an office. It's the only time I've ever had a straight job. A regular job that people go to in the morning, and so crushing. I kept my eyes on the prize, and I knew that that's what I was there for, and I'm very able to just like disconnect from the rest, and I just need to have health insurance and benefits and be under an umbrella for a while to just get myself back up to a place. And I kind of just took it, you know. I worked for crazy people that were totally, totally off their rockers, but I like them as people. I still like them as people. I still find them really funny and really interesting, but as bosses, they were horrendous. I want to be a professional artist. I just want to be a professional working artist. I don't want to have to do like bullshit side stuff anymore. I want to be able to raise my babies and bake and grow food and live the dream. Be barefoot and painting and having friends all around. And I'd like to have a commune, you know? That's what I ultimately really, really would want. I think that prior to having children, it didn't feel like that was really the totally desirable end game as much as it is now. That was always just kind of like a side entree of like, I would like to have this lifestyle in addition to all of these other things. But I think having, you know, almost a decade in New York of sampling so many different versions of lifestyles I was into, definitely realized how I like to spend my time. And I've absolutely realized that time is a luxury and time is, you know, a commodity. And it was actually one of my friend's bosses, it's kind of her mentor, that would tell us this. But she would say, you know, at some point in my career, I decided I didn't want to be rich in money anymore. I want to be rich in time. And I really recognize that for myself as a person, it fits so much more of my personality. I can't do someone else's schedule. I'm not a person that responds to someone else's schedule. I hated school always for that reason. I hated having to go to lectures at a certain time in college. I hated having an office job because I hated being there at 9 a.m. in the morning. I do much better working at my own pace. And I think that's, you know, the burden of most creative people is that you kind of hate authority and you kind of hate schedules. But I definitely can recognize now that I've had children that that is ultimately how I'd like to spend my days, on my own terms, making stuff every day. try to remember that I have to be the one to come first, and then I want to tend to my marriage second, and then I would like to tend to my children third, but it's totally counterintuitive and it's completely impossible because you have children that need you literally all day long, and their needs are great, and their needs are in your face, and their needs are noisy, you know, they're just, they just need so much from you all the time. I think that I read it in someone's interview. They were discussing their own sort of personal ethos at home with their family. I think it's a pretty specific, like, school philosophy of parenting, and one that I think makes a tremendous amount of sense, because I think I know so many people, and I think that we can all kind of reflect back on our parents. And here's the rub of parenting, is that ultimately you look at your own parents and you think, either it's so silly that they gave their entire life to me, they should have been doing things for themselves, we didn't need them that much, my mom should have gone back to work, whatever. Or you think, I wish they were around so much more. My parents were at work all the time. They missed my basketball games. They whatever. So ultimately, it's kind of like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. I thoroughly believe, and there was actually another article I read the other day that was talking about this, but I thoroughly believe that one of the biggest contributing factors to your child's eventual well-being is just your current mental hygiene, is your current state of well-being. Children are resilient. Children will recover, but I think that the most important factor for your child when they're young is that you're happy, because ultimately, if you're not happy, they absorb all of that. If you're not happy and are not looking after yourself, you're not going to be able to look after them in the capacity that they need. And if you are not looking after your relationship, however you define that, whatever you choose to have a relationship in, and you end up letting that break off, that's going to affect them more than anything ever will, you know, losing a parent or just a high functioning adult in their life, whatever that is. You know, I think that it's huge. My sense of self is so much different now in how, you know, I view my priorities as a person and what I have let fall off track since I've had children. And it's frustrating and it's, you know, annoying, but I think having a really good group of friends always helps with that. I always feel the most myself when I'm in the city and I'm with my friends, or I'm on the phone and I'm with my friends and they don't ask anything about the kids. That's nice, you know. My year between my freshman and my sophomore year in college, I moved to California by myself because I just kind of needed to check out and I needed to just figure my head out. My family situation was so crazy. And I got certified as a postpartum doula, which means that you, there's two types of doulas. It means that you help mothers of new families kind of learn the ropes of learning how to be a mother and helping with breastfeeding, helping with just mediating at home, helping with exhaustion, helping with physically taking care of mom and baby. And I really liked that. And I had, like, you know, private clients in San Diego, but I more so moved there to just read and be by myself. And I read all summer long dozens and dozens of books, and I meditated at the beach every day. And that was super shaping for me in terms of just my worldview.
But ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Ain't no sunshine when she's
Tracy Morgan has, like, a hilarious quote from one of his stand-up pieces, I think, that he says, you know what the biggest room in my house always is? The room for improvement. And that's how I feel about everything across the board. I always want to work on myself. I always want to work on my house. I always want to work on my marriage. I always want to work on curating my closet. I always work on everything. Everything is a project. It probably annoys my husband, but in my opinion, in my dream version of life, we could constantly be workshopping everything. We could constantly be workshopping our marriage. And we both get it that it's always going to be a process. You know, part of our vows when we got married is, you know, we both said, like, I promise to fight the good fight. You know, like, we both We both realize that it's not just going to be like smooth sailing all the time, and neither one of us were naive about that, you know? We've known each other now for 12 years, almost on the head, a couple of days ago, but we didn't date. We've never dated that whole time, and we essentially got engaged and then moved in together and then started dating, and we are always kind of getting to know each other better. And we both just know each other through and through and through. Like, there's just no surprises. I said yes because it was the first time in my life that I really decided to, like, choose love. It's the first time that I decided to, like, make the decision to choose love and not, like, go for the more rational thing. I'm terrible in relationships, always. And it's the first time that I really, you know, knew that, like, this was important, this was worth exploring, this was where I needed to be, this is where I actually wanted to be. I think it's making me cry because I think, like, right now is kind of the most trying situation you can be in when you have two babies and two new ones, because you just become ships passing in the night. We hardly ever see each other because you're just on, you're just in it. You're just in the trenches all the time. But, you know, we definitely have our moments always of, like, high-fiving each other in the hallway, and we're always like, couple more months. It could not last any more than a couple more months. And we both have to, like, say that all the time. Direct eye contact to be like, there's an end point here. Like, there's an expiration point to this kind of stress. But, you know, we both definitely realize that right now is probably the biggest set of obstacles all at once that we face as a couple. And there's something kind of exciting about that. Like, there's something kind of exciting about knowing that we're working through something so tremendous right now, and we're working through something that's also so very ordinary and so very universal, and all of our parents did it. And it's what everybody says about having a second kid, like, you know, that your ass just gets handed to you with a second child. And that, like, one is fine, once you have two, you may as well have seven. It's not twice the amount of work, it's seven times the amount of work, you know? So I think that with, like, our process as a family, that's how I look at it. I do. I look at everything as a process. The constant saying all the time that people want to tell you, you know, the days are long but the years are short, because everyone understands that what you're currently doing right now is just difficult. It just is. It's just difficult when they're babies. So much is personally asked of your resources. My girlfriend was asking me this the other day, like, do you have the sense that it's going to get better? Like, is it that in a couple of years here you're going to be, like, back to yourself and you're going to be feeling good and you're going to be looking normal and everything's going to be good? Or do you get the sense that it gets harder? And I said, both. You know, like, right now it's just my needs are so base. Like, I literally can't get enough water into my body. I literally can't get enough rest into my body. Like, my cells can't absorb enough rest because there's just so much to do. And when everyone else is asleep, I'm worried about them sleeping, and I'm constantly listening to them, and they cough, and I wake up, and I, you know, I'm awake 45 times a night. Like, there's not even nights where I'm awake, like, four times a night. I'm awake all night long every night. So, yes, time is both going by very slowly, and it's shocking that guy's almost three. I can't believe Reisha and I have already been together 5 years. I can't believe that it could possibly be at a point that I've lived in the Hamptons for 18 months. Well, it's also just car culture exacerbates the situation out here. I've been living in Brooklyn and in New York City for quite a while now, and I love just the collective energy of all those people stacked up in all those boxes right on top of you all the time. I love just being on the sidewalk. I love just, like, chopping it up with the dude at my dry cleaners. Like, hanging out with the dudes at Bodega. Like, you see the same guys on the corner all the time. You see the same girls on the street all the time. You see the same people at the park walking their dogs. You don't know these people necessarily, but it's your community, you know? It's a social orbit that you travel around in all the time. You know them, they see your children, they know when you're pregnant, they know your dog, like, whatever, whatever. I love that about New York. I love the constant interaction of people that you can both be completely anonymous and completely social all day long. So it's so much that element being taken away in addition to my actual friends and my actual social orbit being taken away that really hurts out here. It's car culture changes all of that, and it kind of makes me sad that the rest of the country, for the most part, is just car culture. It's people sitting in their cars by themselves commuting to work. I find so unbelievably depressing.
I'd like to do a song of great social and political import.
I could just go to bed right now just thinking about that. Thinking about that that's people's regular life just seems so sad, in that we're just such funny animals. What we choose to do with our lives, what we choose to do with our time.
I'm coming over, see me down at the station by the lane with my hands in my pocket, jingling a wish coin.
I'd so much rather be walking. I'd so much rather be walking and seeing people and have the, you know, actual, like, ability to be taking photos, to be looking at buildings, to be doing nothing at all, to just be humming around, rather than having to be, like, in control of a vehicle and getting to a destination and knowing that it's no matter what, my travel is costing me money, because then I have to go put more gas in my car and I have to maintain my car. And I hate that about driving. I hate that I have to think of the financial tie to me physically moving through space and my children moving through space, because everything's real stretched out here. Everything's real spaced out, and that's a big contributing factor. You know, I think about the fact that maybe I shouldn't take my kids to the museum because it's 25 minutes away and I've been driving all week and I'm going to have to go fill up the car again, and we spend so much money on gas out here. But, you know, it's all of those things. It's that if I really want to go see people out here, for the most part, it kind of by default just ties into my husband's restaurants or his colleagues, no matter what. And I'm going to have to spend money, and I'm going to mess up their nap time. Or it's also just that there's no real, like, in, like, South American countries, how there's just, like, a town square, you know? People just kind of hang out, and people hang out, and people meet up, and that's where people just hang out around the fountains and just kind of meet after dinner and have a coffee, have an ice cream, whatever. That's a nice aspect no matter where you live, and out here it doesn't feel like there's much in terms of somewhere I could just go to just hang out. You know, you try and go to the park to let your kids play, whatever. It's just sparse out here. It's not heavily populated off season. It's depressing to want to go get a coffee and walk around downtown, and I don't want to shop because I don't want to be contributing to consumerism all the time. I don't want to be spending my days doing that, but otherwise you can't really run into anybody. And it's hard for us. We don't feel like there's a real like-minded community out here. We don't really have much of a peer group at all. And that's difficult to sort of reconcile what that means in your mind. You feel like you're putting forth some real judgments in the world with what that means, but it's also just the facts of life. As we all get older, we all just become more extreme versions of ourselves. It's an interesting combo of people that are out here, but it doesn't feel like they're necessarily our people.
Bringing something we must learn, and we are led to those who help us most to grow if we let them.
And I don't enjoy small talk a whole lot, and that's a difficult thing personality-wise if you're trying to make friends as an adult. Making friends as an adult, no matter what, is just awkward once you get out of sort of college years, and if you're not doing it in a professional capacity in which your colleagues first, and then you kind of think you might take a shine to this person, and then you kind of go through the weird dating of like, should we exchange phone numbers? Do you want to hang out sometime? Whatever. But it's an awkward thing to do no matter what. If you don't really super enjoy small talk, I think it compounds that. It's also, I'm just tremendously impatient, so it's difficult to think about how exhaustive the process is going to be of catching a new person up on like your entire life story, so that you can get to that real comfortable shorthand of just being like, yo, I feel like shit today, can you come over and hang out? It's hard to get to a point with someone new that you're going to be comfortable enough to just ask things of them. And I very, very much so have friends that we're all just down. We're all just down for whatever. We're all just down for each other all the time. I definitely know a really good group of really scrappy girls in which we're all real resourceful. We're all really, really self-sufficient, and we're all really down for our people. We'll do whatever it takes. And it's nice to be able to know that, you know, you have backup when you need it. But I absolutely think that, you know, we're the captains of our own ship. Like, everything is about the decisions that you make all day long, every day, nonstop. It's not any, you know, 8 or 9 formative decisions, just where you go to school, what career you choose, where you choose to live, whatever. It's so much more than geography. It's a constant, nonstop decision-making process of who you're going to be. And we are constantly faced with moral tests in our lives that are both private and public, and that shapes us, that forever shapes us, that forever shapes the world around us, how we treat people, how we go about our life, what we choose to make our priorities.